Today, confidence fades as APRA caves again. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Today, we had news that APRA has watered down their proposed capital buffers, which were expected to be imposed on the banks. The latest consumer and business confidence data shows that the second rate cut did indeed alarm the nation, as we predicted, and more units are selling at a loss, according to CoreLogic. CoreLogic has released its latest pain and gain report, which shows that more than one in five recent apartment buyers across Australia's capital cities sold at a loss in the March quarter of 2019, roughly double the level of 3 years ago. They showed that all mainland capitals have experienced double-digit loss-making apartment sales in March, with Darwin down 58.2% and Perth down 49.2%, they're faring worst, and Sydney down 11%, faring the best. CoreLogic says that for capital city units, 78.6% resold at a profit over the quarter, with the share down from 81.8% the previous quarter and 85.7% a year ago. The 78.6% of units resold at a profit was slightly higher than the previous month, but prior to that, it was the lowest share since the 3 months to June 1997. With housing market conditions expected to weaken, and property investors fared worse, with some having to sell, according to our surveys, thanks to the switch from interest only to principal and interest loans, and of course the overhang from flammable cladding on thousands of buildings, and more buildings being reported with construction faults. And by the way, units sold as a loss over the quarter were typically held by their owners for 6.3 years. So this is a structural issue, not a blip. Now turning to APRA, they released a discussion paper last November proposing that the four major Australian banks should be required to increase their total capital by 4 to 5 percentage points of risk-weighted assets over 4 years. Most would raise additional Tier 2 capital. And for small to medium ADIs, extra loss absorbing capital would be considered on a case-by-case basis as part of the resolution planning process. In other words, how a bank would manage its own failure if required. They said that these changes would increase the financial resources available for APRA to safely resolve an ADI and minimise the need for taxpayer support in the unlikely event of failure. They also fulfilled a recommendation from the 2014 Financial System Inquiry that APRA implements a framework for minimum loss absorbing and recapitalisation. But now, they say, after extensive engagement with a range of stakeholders, APRA has announced the major banks will only need to lift total risk-weighted assets by 1 January 2024. APRA amended its initial proposal, they say, in response to concerns raised in a number of submissions about the lack of sufficient market capacity to absorb an extra 4 to 5% of risk-weighted assets in Tier 2 issuance and the potential to excessively increase bank funding costs. APRA expects the issuance of an additional 3% of risk-weighted assets in Tier 2 instruments can be achieved in an orderly manner and be maintained through various market conditions. APRA's overall long-term target of an additional 4 to 5 percentage points of loss-absorbing capacity remains unchanged, they say, and over the next 4 years, yes, 4 years, APRA will consider the most flexible alternative method of sourcing the remaining 1 or 2 percentage points, taking into account the particular characteristics of the Australian financial system. So let's be clear, on the back of loosening lending standards last week, APRA has now watered down the bank's capital holding expectations, to the benefit of the banks, of course, as holding more capital costs. Now, tell me again, who is APRA working for? And remember that the Reserve Bank of New Zealand stands as a beacon on the need for more capital to protect households and businesses. We are a million miles away from that in Australia. And that's less than a year after the Royal Commission exposed all the bad practice and even criminal behaviour. Now turning to consumer confidence, it fell over the weekend, an ANZ survey suggests, as people appeared to view the latest cut to the cash rate by the Reserve Bank of Australia as a signal of worsening economic conditions. The ANZ Roy Morgan Australian Consumer Confidence Index dipped 1.1% from the previous week, with respondents' perception of the economy, including the outlook for the next 12 months, retreating 3.6%, and prospects about conditions in the next 5 years sliding 1.7%. One bright spot was the weekly measure of sentiment, which is based on about 1,000 face-to-face interviews conducted on Saturdays and Sundays, and they recorded a 3.7% rise in how people felt about their financial conditions compared to a year ago, and a 1.3% increase regarding their finances over the next 12 months. This is simply a result of the lower rates reducing borrowing costs. And the NAB Business Survey for June out today revealed that the spike in business confidence in May, which was of course post the federal election, and with the RBA set to cut rates, was indeed a one-hit wonder. The survey was conducted from June 18th to 28th, and remember that the previous survey was conducted around the time of the federal election. Business confidence fell 5 basis points to plus 2 in June. That's a below average reading. And this largely reversed the 7-point spike in May. So it sort of answers the question as to whether the jump in confidence that was measured back then is actually just a flash in the pan or something more substantive. The answer is no, it's a flash in the pan. The sharp and immediate reversal in confidence highlights that currently the business environment is a challenging one. The March national accounts, released on June 5th, was another weak report, and it reveals that annual output growth has slowed to the softest pace in the decade at 1.8%. The business conditions index rose in June up by 2 points to plus 3, also a below average reading for the June quarter. And looking at the industry measures, the trend deterioration continues, specifically in the household sector, showing that households remain under pressure. And by contrast, the finance and property and business segments bounce a little, thanks to perhaps expectations with regard to the housing market improving. And by state, business conditions across New South Wales and Victoria remained at below average at plus 3 and plus 4, reflecting the housing downturn. And that's going to have an impact on construction work done ahead. The only bright spot today was news from ASIC that it had released a consultation paper on the first proposed use of its new product intervention power. Here, ASIC is looking to address significant consumer detriment in the short-term credit industry. The product intervention power allows ASIC to intervene where financial and credit products have resulted in or are likely to result in significant consumer detriment. The new product intervention power is an important addition to ASIC's regulatory toolkit. It reinforces ASIC's ability to directly confront and respond to harms in the financial sector. ASIC considers that significant consumer detriment may arise in relation to a particular model designed to provide short-term credit at high cost to vulnerable customers. These consumers include those on low incomes or in a financial difficulty. In its first proposed deployment of this power, ASIC is targeting a model involving a short-term credit provider and its associate, who charge fees under separate contracts. When combined, these fees can add up to around 990% of the loan amount. While ASIC is presently aware of two firms currently using this model, the proposed product intervention order would apply to any firm using this type of business model. Under the recommended option 1, ASIC would use their product intervention power to, first, make an industry-wide product intervention order by legislative instrument of the Corporations Act to prohibit credit providers and their associates from providing short-term credit and collateral services except in accordance with a condition which limits the total fees that can be charged. And secondly, if a new model which seeks to circumvent the industry-wide product intervention order evolves in response to the prohibition, they would amend the existing order or introduce a new order to address that model. In ASIC's view, this option is preferable because firstly, the product intervention order will prevent the use of the short-term lending model, which is causing significant consumer detriment. Secondly, it will prevent other credit and collateral service providers from adopting this model. Third, it promotes protection for consumers who require small amount credit contracts, but who are provided with short-term credit and service agreements in reliance on the short-term credit exemption. And fourth, it is a more comprehensive and timely response than the other options. So kudos to ASIC for trying to get to grips with the burgeoning short-term high-cost credit sector, which many households are using and, in so doing, are falling into more significant debt. So ahead, we'll be watching Confidence and we'll be publishing the results of our own surveys very soon, which also, by the way, shows ongoing deterioration. And as for APRA, once again, it appears to be aligned with the interests of the big banks and against the interests of businesses and consumers. Not that I'm surprised at all. The whole financial system supervisory model is frankly busted. Before I go, a quick reminder, our next live stream Q&A event is scheduled for Tuesday, the 16th of July at 8 p.m. Sydney time. Here is the link to bookmark the event. You can ask a question via the live chat next week or send in a question beforehand via the DFA blog. The link is below. I look forward to discussing our updated scenarios with you. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching and I'll see you again next time.